Alcoholism doesn't just affect the individual, it affects all loved ones as well. And we're joined now on the line. We have Lou Lewis and Dr. John Mahon, who are husband and wife. They run the website bottle-up.com. So that's bottleup.com. It's a website which helps both alcoholics but also their families. Lou and Dr. John, it's a real pleasure having you on the show, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, you're really welcome.
Let's start off with yourself, John, if we can. How big a problem is alcoholism, and is this something that you've experienced yourself, either personally or through loved ones?
Well, both of us have experienced it from the opposite sides. Lou lived with an alcoholic for 30 years and was married to him before his death. Myself, I was hospitalised. 30 years ago, I was in a psychiatric hospital. Told I had liver damage, brain damage, and I had 6 months to live if I continued to take alcohol or drugs. So yes, both of us have had experience of it.
And with that in mind, in 2020, is alcoholism a real big issue? One that perhaps, of course, with the lockdown has maybe even been exacerbated?
I mean, it's always been a big issue, but at the moment, it's much more of an issue. I mean, statistics suggest that, you know, about one in three people have experience of alcoholism, whether it's from their own problem or whether it's somebody in their families. In fact, most of the time when we talk to people about what we do, they nearly always say, well, I have a friend, I have an uncle, I have a father, etc. You know, so it touches many, many people, and the families are really very hard hit by it.
Lou,
which is why we started Bottled Up.
And it's interesting because, Lou, I want to come in and say that how do you, someone who's watching someone go through this, approach them and try to communicate without them seizing up on you?
Sure. I think, first of all, to know your subject matter. Now, I stayed with my husband because I knew he really loved me.
Yes.
But it was really confusing because usually if someone loves you, you say, this doesn't work for me, and they love you, they try to change. Mm-hmm. But with the drinking issue, I would say, this doesn't work for me, it's tearing the family apart. And actually, it took me nearly 30 years to realise that what happened then is I kicked the guilt off again, so I actually reinforced the behaviour. So I think for me, learning what worked and what didn't is absolutely vital. And certainly, gradually, I mean, I was a counsellor, I felt I should have known better. Gradually, I learnt that it was a dance that I could step out of.
And it's interesting you say a dance, because I know that we, and sometimes it's our loved ones that are worst enemies, and we are their worst enemy as well, trying to help them through that sort of realisation and healing. I know that there's obviously someone who's probably drinking. You've never seen him drunk. You know that they have wine or a drink. At what point does it become a crutch as opposed to something that's enjoyable and sociable or something that you do just to wind down? I mean, there's many people who might think one glass of wine every night and day, it can't be that bad. It just, is that make me an alcoholic? So I guess there has to be some kind of line where people can actually identify so that they know there's a threshold when, you know, they can look at themselves. I guess, John, where would that threshold be for people who are probably listening right now thinking, you know, I don't class myself as an alcoholic and I drink every day and I don't need to have a drink every day, but I enjoy it. So where do we find the balance?
I often say that the definition of an alcoholic is somebody else, because it's certainly not me, you know, and I think that's the way people look at it, because it can always find somebody who drinks more often, drinks more chaotically than themselves. But it's not about the amount. It's about the relationship with alcohol.
Right.
It's about whether you start to... We've kind of moved away from the idea of alcoholism and moved on to dependence. Right. And I think that really sort of sums it up. Are you dependent on alcohol? Are you dependent on alcohol for example, when I was drinking, I mean, I was quite shy. I was terrible around women, you know, I was really sort of introverted, but alcohol changed all that. Alcohol allowed me to be what I thought interesting, funny, and of course God's gift to women. The majority of the women totally disagreed with me, but that was neither here nor there, you know.
Yes.
It's what it felt like inside, because alcohol is transformative. It's a drug.
Yeah.
And it's how it makes you feel. And if you depend on that feeling, then yes, you have a problem.
And Lou, I guess I have to ask you, you know, when you see that other people might be thinking, yeah, but, you know, I know that there's other vices out there that people use as a crutch. Food, sugar, chocolate, drink. You know, this drink can't be the only thing that's the worst thing for us. We've seen people with obesity going up. Why is everyone always going towards alcoholism and saying that's the worst case scenario when we see that we can have worst effects to our health through our diets? What do we say to people who use that as an argument?
Well, I think it is because it impacts relationally. I mean, I can sit around and I can get really loud and my husband might not like it or my partner might not like it. But basically, I drink, you know, I eat to myself. But when you drink, it changes your behavior. And therefore, we call it problem drinking rather than alcoholism because it's a relational problem. And, you know, a problem drink is a problem drink when the person you're having a relationship with begins to be badly impacted by what you're doing. That is often the mirror, if you like, that you can see how your drink is impacting the other life and the other relationship that you're in.
I suspect, Lou, and also John, there's going to be many people listening and they're going to be able to relate to a lot of the different examples that you've just discussed and talked about. Yeah. There is a couple of other things that we do want to talk to you. So are you happy to stay on the line, guys? We're going to head to a track and we'll come back. We'll continue having
Absolutely.
A chat with both Lou and John. And if you would like further details for their website, it is bottle-up.com, bottle-up.com. And it's a website, as we've mentioned already. It helps those that suffer with alcoholism, but also their families as well. And we'll be focusing on that straight after this.
Chaka.
It's a brilliant name, Shaka. I agree with you. Now, it's 10:29. Welcome along to the show. It's Late Nights with Sunny and Shay. And this evening, we are marking Alcohol Awareness Week. We've very much been focusing on and talking about how people from every walk of life battle with and deal with alcoholism. Now, the Royal College of Psychiatrists has warned only back in September that the addiction services in England are not equipped to treat the 8.5 million people who are drinking at high risk during COVID-19. They found that the number of people addicted, for example, to opioids as well, seeking help in April, has reached a five-year high. And they are very much talking about the surge when it comes to demand post the pandemic for these services after years and years of cuts, and how these services will be coping and struggling to cope with giving the right support to those people who are suffering with not only alcoholism, but also drug-related problems as well. Well, joining us on the line, we've been speaking to husband and wife, Lou and John, who run the website bottle-up.com. It's a website which helps both alcoholics and their families and provides support. Lou and John, thank you so much for staying with us.
Pleasure.
Earlier on, both of you were talking about, and you mentioned that you've both, in your own ways, dealt with alcoholism. And my question firstly is to yourself, John. Are you concerned? I've just kind of given some stats there from the RCP with regards to this year and the pandemic. Are you concerned about services being stretched, overstretched even, and organisations like yourself, you know, will you be able to provide the support that people who are suffering with alcoholism need going into 2021?
Well, our organisation doesn't get support from the government anyway, so
right.
that's not a big problem. We are actually independent, and we're dependent on donations. But we've been going there for 12 years, and we'll continue to go. In terms of the statutory services, there's been cutbacks year upon year upon year upon year. What's happened now is that, you know, that we are having cutbacks meeting in this pandemic where there's a real rise in drinking. So, you know, it's a reduction in services and an increase in drinking. So, yes, we're in for a real problem again. As I say, it's been going on for years. In terms of families of drinkers, there has been very few services for them anyway.
Yeah.
And with the cutbacks, there's going to be even less services for them, which is, you know, it's a tragedy, to be honest.
And this is something I did want to talk about as well, Lou. I know that Sonny, John and Lou, Sonny talked about his experience. I also have had, you know, direct experience of alcoholism as well. And Lou, do you think it's fair to say that sometimes the family members are the forgotten ones in all of this? You know, that the lasting impact of a disease like alcoholism doesn't just affect the individual. And of course, we need to provide that support. But also it's about the mental psychological impact that it has on, you know, whether it's the children, the husband or the wife, the immediate loved ones as well.
Yeah, and the terrible loneliness. It's very hard to tell people what's going on. And yeah. If you love your partner, you feel like you're dropping them in it. And I think that's one of the things we try to do in our website is create a sense of community. And one of the things we love is to see people going through the program, but also then opening up and supporting each other. We've got people from Australia talking to people in the Midlands, talking to people in Scotland. And we long for people to come and open up, and then we kind of build them up, first of all, to look after themselves as a family member, and then to look at the behaviours that are going on and to help them come to a point where they can really confront their drinker in a really healthy and helpful way and create a dialogue. But that does take time. And often, as I said earlier, you have to stop before you can start going down that road. And we take people right through that from the very beginning, right through the program. It's completely free. And we've had wonderful feedback, actually, from people that have been helped. I have to say that.
That is amazing.
John, what does recovery look like? If someone's listening right now, and maybe this is the one conversation that we're having with you, thinking, okay, you know what? I need to make a difference. I need to do something. What is the first step they should need to take if they and how do they start that road to recovery if we already know the NHS are probably under stressed and underfunded? I mean, as much as we're giving them these numbers, there's still hope out there, isn't there? There is people out there willing to help, and there are people who are out there trying to, you know, reach out. How do they start that recovery process?
Okay, there's a huge hope out there. I mean, there's lots and lots of it. What we're starting to see is lots of different groups springing up. Local groups who are doing local, you know, sort of self-help groups, mutual help groups. And there's also, there's help online, for example, our website online. But the first thing that they have to do is they have to really sort of come out of the closet. Because one of the ways that alcoholism or addiction per se actually thrives is in secrecy. If it's very secret, then it just continues to flourish because there's no confrontation of the addiction. So first of all, they have to actually come out and start to talk to people about it. You know, they don't have to sort of drop their drinker in it, but come out and talk because they need help for themselves. They need to strengthen themselves. They need to start and get look after themselves, because it's only in that way. The analogy I tend to use with people is when you're on an airplane and the stewardess stands up and starts to give the, you know, the speech at the beginning, you know, the exits are here, the exits are there. And then they start to talk about the oxygen masks. And the one thing that they always say is when the oxygen mask comes down, put yours on first.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is you're not helping yourself. How can you help other people? And that's the one of the things that we start with. Lou talked earlier on about it being a dance. And yes, it is a dance. At the moment, the drinker is the one who's leading the dance. You have to actually, as I say, start to look after yourself, because only then will you get the strength to start and lead the dance yourself. And that way, things start to change.
I have to ask you as well, John and Lou, and maybe you both have different perspectives, I don't know, but so I'll go to you first, John, and then Lou. What's your perspective on the use of language? You know, I know that there are some people who prefer to say that they are living with or suffering with a disease like alcoholism. So they'll say, you know, I'm suffering with alcoholism. There'll be others who want to use the term and say, no, I am an alcoholic or a recovering alcoholic. You know, the power of language is so important, isn't it? Especially when we're talking about alcoholism. What is your thoughts on this?
I think language can get in the way at times, and I think you know, semantics can actually start to get in the way. People can use, we don't tend to use the word alcoholic too often. We prefer to use problem drinking or dependency or something like that, because the problem with alcoholism is that it's everybody's got a different definition of it.
That's right. That's why I ask you, actually, because I'm really intrigued by that.
Yeah. To be honest, we'll work with anybody. You can call it whatever you want. If you want to come and talk to me and tell me you're an alcoholic, that's fine by me.
Yeah.
If you want to come and talk to me and say, well, I drink a wee bit too much, that's fine by me.
Right.
You call it whatever you like. Let's not get language get in the way of this.
No,
the
I agree.
Because we are online, we have been criticised for the fact that we talk about alcoholism. But the problem is that we have to, we can call it other things if you want. We can call it, you know, bubbles if you want.
Yeah.
But if people are searching for help, they tend to use words that they know.
So well, that's one of the
words
the
that they know is a shorthand, which is alcoholism.
So true.
You know, once they get in there, we can talk about, you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But if you're trying to find help, then probably you use the word that's most common.
I do agree with you on that. And the reason I do agree with you, John, and the reason I ask, and Lou, come in on this as well if you agree, is because from my own personal, you know, lived in experience of having dealt with alcoholism, I don't use the word alcoholic for that very reason, as you've said. It's because there's a lot of stigma around it. And also from experience that I have seen, it really does create almost a barrier to kind of, it's like this humongous, you know, title that has been put on you. And how do you overcome that? And so in a sense, you know, as you say, using words like having a problem with drinking, perhaps alleviates some of that, if you see what I mean.
If I can say, can I say something here?
Please.
I think the thing is about label. People don't like being labeled.
Yes.
But there is a label in a garment that says how to care for this garment.
Lovely.
And so the labelling, where it can actually get you some care and some help, is a brilliant label. A label that makes you, feels you stigmatised, is an awful label. And I think there's often a confusion between the two. So we'll label something to say, hey, this is how you care for this problem. Mm. But we don't label you an alcoholic, because that's offensive, and it's very unhelpful, actually, because they're already terrible self-esteem before they even start. So.
Yeah, yeah. I do you know what? I have to say I'm so glad you said that, because I really do second that. But look, Lou and John, you are doing such fantastic work, and it really is such a pleasure having you both on the show. Thank you for joining us this evening.
And thank you for the opportunity.
No, not at all. I'm sure that we would love to get you, you know, back on, and perhaps in the new year, if you'd be up for it, we'd really like to follow up with both of you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you so much, John and Lou. And if you would like further details from them, you can go straight to their website. It is bottle-up.com. That's bottle-up.com. As Lou and John, both husband and wife, by the way, as they said, they've got a free program on there to provide support, not just to the individual if you're suffering with alcoholism, but also to the family members, to the loved ones who need that support to get through this. Then do go to the website, bottle-up.com. We are on asking for you to get in touch with the show tonight. If you've been touched by some of what Lou and John have had to say, and you want to share your own experience, then why not pick up the phone, give us a call, let's have a chat.
Call The Late Show now, 08081 009956.
BBC WM